This is Vermont Edition, and today we bring you the leading candidates for lieutenant governor in a face-to-face debate. I'm Jane Lindholm, and I'm joined in VPR's Colchester studio by the major party candidates for lieutenant governor, Randy Brock, a Republican, and David Zuckerman, a progressive Democrat and state senator. Welcome to both of you. What a pleasure
to have
you here.
Thank you.
Listeners, we welcome you as well. As you're following along on social media, please use the hashtag VPRDebates to comment on what you're hearing from the candidates today. Just briefly, here's the format for the debate. In the first half, I will ask the questions with help from Vermonters who've been submitting your questions to us in advance of today's debate. In the second half of the hour, the candidates will question one another directly. And if time allows, we will squeeze in a lightning round before we wrap up. The candidates have agreed to our format, which includes limiting your answers to 1 minute, and there may be some time for follow-ups. So let's just dive right in and get to as much as we possibly can in this hour. What do you see, gentlemen, as the biggest challenge facing the state of Vermont? And how would you use what is a very malleable office to address that challenge as the lieutenant governor? Randy Brock, first to you.
I think the biggest challenge is jobs in the economy. People are saying that they're hurting. People are saying that they want to retire in Vermont. They don't know if they'll be able to. People are leaving the state. Our population is declining. We have the second lowest growth rate in the United States for population. All of those are warning signs. And we have clearly a spending problem in state government. And my goal as lieutenant governor is going to be to encourage job creation and economic expansion, starting with an attitude in state government, some leadership at the top, some opening doors, some pushing the tone at the top down to the tone at the middle of state government, and being the person who is out there talking to people who are thinking of opening businesses, who we can identify as being possible to open businesses in Vermont, but above all, talking to people, particularly the larger and mid-sized employers in Vermont, who we want to stay in Vermont. It's focusing on retaining businesses, and people haven't been talking to them.
How would you bridge that gap? You mentioned both working with an administration and the legislature on jobs legislation, but also talking to Vermonters, both as individuals and people who are running companies. So how do you bridge that gap? What's your strategy as lieutenant governor for bridging the gap between the legislature and the people?
Well, it's the same strategy that I've employed throughout my career, both in the private sector and in the public sector as state auditor and as a state senator. You clearly have to negotiate. You clearly have to bring constituencies along. You have to do a lot of listening. You have to do a lot of collaborating. And it's collaboration in government that's going to be the key to making any initiative work, and also bringing in, as I mentioned, people from outside government. That discussion is critically important, and I want to lead that discussion.
David Zuckerman, same question for you. What is the biggest challenge facing the state of Vermont, and how would you, as lieutenant governor, address that specific challenge?
Well, thank you. I would say that overall economic development is a huge issue, but even more importantly, stagnant wages. You know, Vermonters have not seen their wages going up the way that we've seen wealthier folks' wages go up. In Vermont, over 4 years, those earning over $100,000 have seen their incomes go up by $3.7 billion in the last 4 years, and yet average working Vermonters have not. So certainly advocating for a raise in the minimum wage steadily, not all at once, so that our small business owners like myself can actually absorb it as we sell more product, as people have more money to spend. Rather than trickle down, it's more bubble-up economics. We've had the failure of trickle down for now a couple of decades. And as far as helping make that happen, I have a long-standing track record of bringing more people into the political process. As lieutenant governor, there's time in the day to bring folks into the state house to advocate for themselves, so it's not all just political pundits inside the building, but actually people throughout the state. We've done that to raise the minimum wage in the past. We've done that to pass GMO labeling. We've done that with marriage equality. That's how I've operated in the past, and this position really affords a great opportunity to expand on that work.
If the priorities are things that are very specific legislative issues, like raising the minimum wage, which would obviously take the legislature to ask, you've served in the legislature for 20 years. Why not continue to be there where you can put policies in place rather than the lieutenant governor's chair where you don't actually have much real power?
Well, again, as I addressed in the opening, my experience as a legislator really was relatively different than a lot of other legislators in terms of how much time and effort I spent bringing people into the building and into the process from outside the statehouse. And as lieutenant governor, there's actually a greater opportunity to take advantage of that strength and ability that I have, because you're not serving on a committee all morning or all afternoon. You certainly, your main job is to preside over the Senate and make sure, again, all sides are heard and incorporated in the discussion, and make sure that body functions very well and productively, because it's very limited time with 30 senators to get everything done.
You're listening to a debate between the major candidates for lieutenant governor, Republican Randy Brock, and progressive Democrat David Zuckerman. And listeners, if you're following along on social media, use the hashtag VPR debates to carry on this conversation. Both candidates have mentioned jobs, wages, the economy as the top issue facing the state of Vermont. So let's stay there and get to some questions that have been submitted by our listeners. Lori in Colchester asks, what would you do specifically to stimulate higher paying jobs in Vermont? Please be specific on this issue. Similarly, Allison says, I'd like to hear how the candidates will bring real jobs for young people to Vermont, jobs that pay real salaries, which one can raise a family on, jobs that provide full benefits and opportunities for advancement. What are the candidates' concrete plans to bring corporations into the state? And David Zuckerman, you get to go first on this one.
Well, I would say two things. One is, I don't feel that expanding the economy is necessarily done by bringing corporations into the state. We have incredible entrepreneurs in Vermont, and we have lots of very successful small businesses that are ready to go to the next level. They might have 3 to 5 employees. Let's help them get to 10 to 20 employees. Those kinds of businesses are going to be the backbone of our economy for a very long time. We can't compete with New York or other states that give away $1 billion in tax credits to draw a corporation in, and then they leave when they get that candy taken away. You know, ultimately, we have to develop our in-house and in-state businesses and expand. And actually, unlike some of the rhetoric that's out there, Vermont has seen 500 more businesses over the last 6 years and 15,000 more jobs over the last 6 years. And we need to continue to expand that growth, not do things to change it and all of a sudden lose those. As far as attracting young people, one of the biggest areas that young people are involved in is the internet economy, software, hardware, etc. And I'd like to continue to work towards expanding broadband into our rural areas, not only to draw young people to Vermont, but also to allow people to stay in their home communities and have jobs in their home communities instead of commuting all the time.
So if Lori in Colchester is listening and she's saying, okay, here are my check marks for the specifics of what you're going to do. One is to work on broadband so that people can have right. increased access to internet wherever they decide to work. What are the other specifics?
Well, others would be to have liaisons in government. And I think Randy's talked about this some in terms of making government work better with businesses. And as lieutenant governor, reaching out to those small businesses and saying, what are the hurdles to expansion? Let's make sure that our Agency of Commerce and Economic Development, as well as Natural Resources and Energy, and labor, all work together. We need to expand accessibility to higher education and reduce those costs so that Vermonters have a chance to get that technical training. There are employers all over the state who offer $13 and $15 an hour jobs who can't find the employees. We need to bridge that gap.
Just very quickly, David Zuckerman, you mentioned raising the minimum wage is something that you support. Sally in Norwich wants to know, to what? What's the number?
Well, a lot of the discussion has been to $15 an hour, but let's remember that what we're talking about is over about a 4 or 5 year period. And the goal there is to put, if it goes up by $1 a year, that puts $2,000 more in our working Vermonters' pockets when they work 40 hours a week. That's money that they can then spend in the local economy at those local small businesses like my own that, frankly, will have a hard time going to $15 an hour overnight. But if we do it gradually and in solid steps every single year, then businesses will know what's coming and consumers will have more money to spend in the local economy.
Randy Brock, before we tackle this larger question about specifics for stimulating higher paying jobs in Vermont, do you support raising the minimum wage? And if so, to what?
I don't support raising the minimum wage other than the automatic series of wage increases that we already have in law. And the reason for this is because of the struggling economy that we have right now, because of our population situation, and because we've just come off a period of 3+ years of stagnation, largely caused by the uncertainty in our economic situation, our economic future, caused by our moving towards single-payer health care that put a lot of economic activity on hold because businesses didn't know if they were going to be faced with a 18% property tax or something else. Stability is extremely important for business expansion. My concern about the raise in the minimum wage, to do so artificially, could make Vermont less competitive and make it more difficult for us to attract businesses and also to look at the businesses that we have that are considering expanding. We already have a drain right now of businesses in Vermont who decide that they want to expand, but they find that Vermont is not the environment in which they do, and they go elsewhere.
So to those questions from Lori and Allison who are wondering, okay, so what can you do specifically to try to stimulate both higher paying jobs that are here, but also to Allison's question to bring in corporations, as she puts it, to attract more jobs, more good jobs to the state?
Well, I think there are a number of things. If you take a look at a lot of our problems, they also represent opportunities. The disaster that we've had with Vermont Health Connect is a classic one, in which we brought in hundreds of employees of large contractors, often from other states and in many cases from other countries. These people that we have working on our contracts are among the largest importers of H-1B visa employees in the United States. That's an opportunity that says we need to build an IT industry in Vermont that's made up of Vermonters, graduates of our colleges, universities, and technical schools, but also as a way to attract new residents, because we do need to attract new residents to put more kids in our schools and to put more money in our tax revenue. So the IT industry, using smaller businesses that can be distributed throughout the state, they don't have to be in one place, is critically important. We can look at value-added agriculture. Instead of building milk plants, for example, we should be focused on things like yogurt manufacturers and others who will use milk here in Vermont. And there are a number of things that I've identified that will help us get there. And there are a whole bunch of other ideas along the same lines.
On the question of attracting tech sector jobs, would you support tax incentives? Would you work on broadband? What would be the way to attract those tech sector jobs?
Well, we have incentives in place right now. The Vermont Growth Employment Growth Incentive, the VEGI program, is one. And that still has a flaw in it. But it is a lot less flawed than it was when I attacked it as state auditor, and we made quantum improvements so that we don't pay money out now until we actually have the jobs that we can book, and then we pay tax credits, money that we would not have gotten. It can be improved, but that's one way to do it, to encourage people. The second is to go and look for specific industries that meet our needs, which we haven't really been doing. We've been throwing a wide net as opposed to hunting for specifics, and that's what I would focus on doing.
Can I just point out that with respect to the change in VEGI and the former auditor's comment that happened because he was auditor, there were a number of us working on that in the legislature for a number of years to make those changes. So I appreciate that as auditor, you joined us in that effort. But let's make sure credit where credit's due.
Credit was due widely. However, it was an audit report that my office wrote that was the linchpin behind the changes that were in fact made.
All right, let's talk about healthcare. This is obviously a big issue for government, state government, for federal government, and for many Vermonters. And as you well know, Vermont is now working towards an all-payer model for healthcare payment. And under this system, providers would be paid set rates determined by their patient population and their health outcomes, rather than a fee-for-service payment model that is usually currently used. We've established that the lieutenant governor doesn't set policy for the state of Vermont, but this is certainly an issue that is vexing to many, and it certainly affects the economy, which you've both mentioned as a top priority. We've not yet found a system for healthcare payment that satisfactorily cuts costs while improving patient outcomes, and Anne in North Hero wants to know how you would go about studying this all-payer model to ensure it will work and what you might put in place instead. Randy Brock.
I'm not sure that the all-payer will work because I have several reservations about it, one of which is we don't have enough information about how it will work. And I already, in plowing through the document, see some conflict between what's been stated publicly and what's in the fine print. So the devil will really be in the details. I'm concerned about making changes that take 1/6 of our economy and completely re-engineer it in a way that's never been done before by any other state that's approaching it the way that we did. And the problem that you have with that is we know the present system has its problems, but it doesn't necessarily follow that the new system will cure those problems, particularly if it's done wholesale. I prefer a much more incremental approach that looks at specific things and that measures what works, that allows us, when something doesn't work, to put the toothpaste back in the tube. The risk is we take a bad situation, we not only don't make it better, but we make it worse. And the issue is, how do we hold providers responsible for health when people drink, smoke, don't follow their doctor's orders, and don't comply? How do we do that and still make providers responsible? And how do we avoid the shopping, the movement, if you will, of gaming the system? And as a fraud examiner, I'm really, really concerned about that possibility here.
The two major party candidates for governor have very different positions on what they'd like to see in terms of improving Vermont Health Connect and in terms of where they would go with health care. So how would you work with an administration, given that you don't know what administration you, should you be elected, could be working with? You know, how do you do that?
Well, In the legislature, I was always in the minority. And in the minority, one of the things that you do more than anything else is you help make bad bills better. So I'm very used to doing that. And to the extent that, let's say there's an administration that has a different viewpoint, by asking questions, by bringing up issues, by being probative, by digging, by being factual, which is one of the things that I think I do best based on my long background and experience in dealing with issues and uncovering problems and reporting them, I think I would be very well positioned to bring up respectfully things that the other side ought to be looking at.
That's Republican candidate for Lieutenant Governor Randy Brock. We're also hearing today from Progressive Democrat David Zuckerman in VPR's Lieutenant Governor debate. Those of you following along on social media are using the hashtag VPR debates. We're talking about health care right now, and David Zuckerman, this goes to you now, in terms of figuring out what's the right model for payment. Again, Ann in North Hero's question is, how would you study this all-payer model to ensure it works, and what might you put in place if it doesn't?
Well, I think there's two different issues here. One is, as Lieutenant Governor, one of your jobs is to serve on the Committee on Committees and address and appoint the various committees in the legislature. And that's where you have a little more influence than the governor because you're part of that process. And I would work to make sure we have a healthcare committee, as we do in the Senate already, but make sure they are prepared and ready to really delve into this. And I know the folks who are on there are ready to do that, because that's where the real research happens and the discussions occur for the best of all Vermonters. Separate from that, as Lieutenant Governor, again, as we spoke earlier, I would have time to bring people into my office and learn more about the issues from all sides. When I was in the House, also as a member of the minority caucus, I found actually not only is our job to make bad bills better, our job was to always make all bills better, look at all issues. And when I was chair of agriculture, also look at issues from all sides, which is why I have the support from the former president of the Farm Bureau, as well as the executive director of NOFA Vermont. Neither organization has endorsed, but I always brought all perspectives in to make sure we were listening to all sides of the issue, not even just two sides. And as Lieutenant Governor, I would continue to do that, whether it's medical practitioners, doctors, alternative medicine providers, insurance companies. Bring in all the experts so that we really understand what the impacts of these kinds of major changes would be.
Are you saying that as Lieutenant Governor, you would in some way try to put your thumb on the scales on this issue of health care in terms of your role with the Committee on Committees in trying to get what you see as the best way to move forward on health care done by who is on that committee?
No, I don't think that's what I implied. What I said was put great minds on that committee who are going to look at this issue from all sides. And I think that's the responsibility of Lieutenant Governors, to make sure the committees have chairs that are very productive and bring in people from all sides and incorporate all their committee members' perspectives as well, and make sure all the committee members are ready to hit the ground running with the topics that they both know about or are interested in, so that every committee can be as effective as possible at looking at all the range of issues and perspectives that are that need to go before them.
Have you already been doing back of the napkin committee assignments?
No, I'm focused on this election season and getting in the last carrots this week on the farm before it gets too cold.
Let's talk about education. Mary in Guilford sent a question saying, none of the governor or lieutenant governor candidates' websites have statements on education. What do they see as Vermont's educational future? To put a finer point on Mary's question, where would you focus your attention on addressing educational challenges, whether it's how public education is funded, educational outcomes, access to higher education? There's a lot of places to go, and as lieutenant governor, you might want to hone your focus. So what would you try to do in this role to address educational issues? David Zuckerman.
Well, for the 4 years I've served in the Senate, I've served on agriculture and education. And we have discussed a lot around the current elementary and high school situation with respect to Act 46, trying to both find administrative savings but allow local communities to maintain the school choice that they have. And obviously there's some adjustments that need to be made to Act 46 to make sure that's still possible. At the same time, the overarching goal of education in my mind is to give people a broad base of information and to teach them how to be critical thinkers. And that's something that's very important as people sometimes shift from one job to another as they're older. You no longer enter one job for 30 years. Sometimes you do a job for 6 or 8 and go to another. You've got to be critical thinkers. With respect to funding of education, I do support the Pelina Pearson legislation that we put into a bill last year to review whether or not we can make all of the education funding system based on income so that wealthier Vermonters pay their fair share and working Vermonters who are paying too much right now could see a slight reduction. And lastly,
so you would take that out of the property tax?
Well, it would still be originally based on property tax and then adjusted for your income. So those right now, 70% pay based on income. The wealthier 30% do not. And when you look at the statistics, they pay a much, much smaller percentage of their income than working class Vermonters.
And otherwise, it would in some way be income sensitized for everybody.
That's right.
Rather than just for the people who are below a certain threshold.
Below about $120,000.
Randy Brock, what about for you? What would you look at in terms of educational improvements, whether it is in the funding model or access to higher education or educational outcomes, lots of different areas to go?
All of the above, because all of the things that you've touched on in your question are critically important. Let's take the first one of cost to begin with, because that is on everybody's mind. If you look at what people are talking about almost before jobs in the economy, it's the crushing effect of property taxes that go up and up every year. And the situation in which education spending seems to rise every year, but the number of kids in school falls every year. We've lost 20,000 kids in the past 15 years, and demographically we're poised to lose 20,000 more. And so when you translate that into the cost per kid in our schools, we have a situation that's exploding. I always ask that if we continue to increase our costs at the rate we're increasing and the students continue to fall at the rate they're decreasing, at what point, what will it cost to educate a kid in Vermont when there are no students in school at all? And it's a horrible thing to contemplate. We need to get our spending under control. And that means we need to look at our staffing, our lowest student-teacher ratio in the nation, one of the highest rates of AIDS in the nation. We also need to focus, though, at the same time on higher education, where we are among the lowest states, 49th of the nation, in what we contribute to higher education. That, too, is something we need to fix.
In terms of this idea of changing the way we fund education, public education in the state, and David Zuckerman's approach of continue to have a property tax that is an educational tax, but also use income for everybody. What do you think about that idea?
Well, I think what we need to do is not just that. That's another one of the piecemeal approaches that's gotten us into the mess that we have right now, in which nobody even understands educational funding, including the people who wrote the bills. We need comprehensive tax reform, and we started this in 2010 with the Blue Ribbon Tax Commission, but it looked at property and sales, never got to the education tax. I think that adding the income tax to education is a very, very bad idea for the simple reason that the income tax, particularly on higher income Vermonters, is extremely volatile. And this will be, particularly in recession years, a seesaw in which people won't be able to predict what their tax bills are going to be.
Would you get rid of income sensitivity? Would you get rid of income sensitivity as we currently have it?
I wouldn't get rid of income sensitivity, but I balance it by looking at all of the three major components of our tax system that work together. We need comprehensive tax reform that takes all of it into account, that simplifies it and makes it more direct. We also need to look at possibly a partially regionally funded education cost model that brings back to localities the ability so that when they make budgetary decisions, they can see the effect of those decisions in their tax rates, something that you can't do right now.
We may have time to address this issue. Again, we need to take a break right now, but coming up, the candidates are going to ask one another questions. I'm hoping some of them will have something to do with some policy differences that you may have, so this may be an area that comes up again. Listeners, you're listening to a debate between the major party candidates for Lieutenant Governor, Progressive and Democrat David Zuckerman and Republican Randy Brock. Just ahead, as I said, they will be questioning one another directly on the issues in this race. We're using the hashtag VPR debates, so you can follow along on social media. This is Vermont Edition. Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm, and this is the Lieutenant Governor's Debate on VPR. Easy for me to say. Today, the two major candidates for Lieutenant Governor, Republican Randy Brock and Progressive Democrat David Zuckerman, are going head-to-head. We've been talking about some of the issues that are important to the listeners who wrote in, called in, shared their questions with us. In this second half of the debate, the candidates will question one another directly. Questions should not be speeches. They should be questions for the other candidate, and they should be succinct. And we're going to start with Randy Brock. Randy Brock, a question for David Zuckerman?
Sure. David, you support a carbon tax, but what would you say to the people in my area who drive 30, 40, and sometimes 50 miles one way to work, who would be immediately impacted by increases in gas taxes? What do you say to our vulnerable neighbors who would pay more for home heating oil and fuel, and to our farmers who would pay more for diesel fuel with milk prices being so low? Especially considering that, according to our own experts, the carbon tax here in Vermont would have no effect on climate change. What do you say to those Vermonters who simply don't believe Vermont's promise that it would give 90% of the money in some way, shape, or form back to those who paid that tax?
Well, a couple things. One is there's a lot of misleading information out there saying that there's an 88 cents gas tax on the table. No one's paying 88 cents more next year or the year after, or the year beyond that, under any proposal that's out there. And I don't support an 88-cent gas tax on the backs of Vermonters. The discussion is around moving our economy away from a carbon-based economy. And we have to address the issues of this year being the hottest year on record, or set to be. Our overall carbon rates in our atmosphere have gone over 400 parts per million. We have to address how to move our economy towards one that has people thriving in their communities and not having to drive 40, 60 miles each way to work. And frankly, we do have tax rebates. We have tax credits. We have lots of systems that work on our tax bills at the end of the year that we can make adjustments to if this kind of policy were to move forward. But I would not support an 88 cents gas tax without being sure that we return that money to our working class Vermonters and our rural Vermonters who would be adversely affected, and that we also would need to help with weatherization and other issues. So it's sort of misleading to say it's just a straight gas tax when really it's a package. And I'm happy to discuss that package, but I would not support it if it was just simply an 88 cents gas on tax, as you and others have suggested.
Follow-up?
Well, I didn't suggest it was 88 cents. I don't believe I used a number
you
at
have
all
in the past
in my question.
Times.
But the 88 cents is a number that we seem to have seen bandied about the legislature by the majority party during the last session. And though it would be 88 cents today, it would be 88 cents at the end of the process. And isn't that what we're really talking about?
Well, there was a bill put in the House. I do not serve in the House that had that figure in it. Nobody knows what the legislation will be going forward. And frankly, that bill, as I recall, did not move. And I don't think a bill that is simply 88 cents gas tax is going to move in the legislature by the majority party or any minority party.
But David, less than a year ago, you were standing on a corner on Church Street in Burlington advocating for the carbon tax.
I'm advocating for a discussion about how we adjust our economy, because I think Vermonters recognize, farmers as well, that in fact our climate is changing very fast. It's impacting our ski industry. It's impacting our fall foliage. We were fortunate this year. It was a very good foliage year. But, you know, the maple trees, when we move to a climate of Virginia, won't exist in Vermont in 40 or 50 years. So I think it's important that we look at this big picture issue, because it's important for our economy and it's important for Vermonters. And, you know, carbon is expensive. It's been subsidized for a long time. And we need to have a discussion about how to move away from a carbon-based economy, not just by implementing an 88 cents gas tax.
Well, though, let me
as
just
has been
ask
implied.
Along those lines, as we talk
very
about
briefly,
carbon,
and then we're going to move on to David.
If
Zuckerman.
There were, we know that technology advances at quantum speed, as it's had on all, virtually every other activity in America. We know right now that there's considerable activity on sequestration of carbon in terms of the gas we use, and of carbon products that effectively are decarbonated. In the event that technology advanced to that point, that would allow us to use the gas reserves that we have, the oil reserves that we had, so long as we solve those problems of fracking and so on that are of concern to everyone. In the event that that happened technologically, would you change your position and then be in favor of gas that does not damage the ecology?
Well, I think the idea that we're moving at quantum speed is pretty interesting because if you know physics, we're definitely not moving at quantum speed. But there, if we could somehow burn fossil fuel and also reduce the parts per million of carbon in the atmosphere at the same time, then that would be great. That's great advancements in technology. I don't think we're seeing that over the next 5 or 10 years. Maybe we will. But the discussion is about science and climate change, which is real. Mm-hmm. And if there is a way to reduce the carbon content in our atmosphere, it's not just about fracking gas. It's burning coal. It's burning gasoline. It's burning oil. It's lots of fossil fuel. Then I think everybody would be open to a different discussion. But so far, that magic bullet of finding a way to just pull carbon out of the air has not really been found. A lot of farmers are looking at carbon sequestration through more grazing methodologies and grass and trees that pull carbon out of the air. But we're still quite a ways from that if you talk to any rational scientist.
All right, let's put a pin in that. David Zuckerman, a question for Randy Brock.
Well, my question actually is about finances and how to increase folks' incomes. I want to thank you, Randy, for finally releasing your taxes so Vermonters now have another way to compare us. From 2011 to 2014, your Wall Street income increased 60% from $250,000 to over $400,000 a year. What ideas do you have for our economy so that the rest of us who actually work 40 to 60 hours a week can see that kind of growth in our income?
Well, I'd love to have everybody earn $400,000, $500,000, or $600,000 a year, but I think we all know that that's not necessarily something that's going to happen. But my income is based on 40 years of hard work, and it's based on some very frugal savings and hopefully based on some wise investments in a whole variety of things, including real estate, of the kind of real estate, for example, that you have on your farm. There's nothing wrong, and the implication that I think is in your question, that anybody who makes a reasonable amount of money is somehow harming the rest of society, and that's not what we're saying at all. I think what we need to do is create an environment in which every young person in Vermont who started with nothing, who lived in a trailer park in Middlebury, can do what I've done. And that's the kind of environment that I'm focused on creating.
I just want to clarify, I don't believe I said anything disparaging about making $250,000 or $400,000. What I said was your growth in income, you know, at that kind of percent, 60% in 3 years, is not what ordinary Vermonters see. And I asked you what kind of economic changes to our economy. You are against raising the minimum wage, which at $1 an hour is only 10% a year, not the 20 to 25% that you increased in your income from Wall Street. What do you see for ordinary Vermonters working 40 to 60 hours a week? How do you see changes in state policy so that those folks can see growth in their income as you did? Not necessarily achieving $200,000 or $400,000. I agree. Not everyone's going to get there.
Well, growth in income for any individual is dependent more than anything else upon that individual. What that individual does in terms of choices and decisions, whether that individual works 30 or 40 hours a week, or whether that individual does, as I did, typically work 70 or 80 hours a week every week. It depends on what that individual does and how he or she does it, where that individual works, what kind of training and skills. The decisions that each individual make determines what any individual is able to do.
So I hear that folks who are earning low incomes and not seeing their wages go up, that's their responsibility.
No, I didn't say that at all. What I said was that every individual is responsible for him or herself. And I think that's absolutely the case. If you're in a job that's not the great job, does that mean that you should stay there and earn a low wage? Or should you seek either training or other jobs or other opportunities in which you can do better for yourself and for your family? I think government's role is to ensure that we've got an environment in which a person is able to do that, that government is assisting in ensuring that we have businesses that can provide opportunity for our people in a whole variety of ways. That's what government exists for. Government is not an ATM machine, though.
Well, no, it's not about government being an ATM machine, but our economy, it sounds like you want to sort of wave a wand and have it be that there's enough jobs for everyone who want to make $15 or $18 or $25 an hour, but that number of jobs for 100,000 Vermonters who are making minimum wage or $12 an hour don't exist. And I asked, what ideas do you
have?
Well,
the ideas are the ideas that I've been talking about through the campaign. For example, the ideas that would in fact enable us to create jobs. The information technology aggregation issue that I discussed before of taking jobs, and these jobs in IT that are used on projects like Vermont Health Connect pay $60,000, $70,000, $80,000, $100,000 per year. And these are jobs that are going to non-Vermonters. Those are jobs that can go to Vermonters, provided we provide the training and also provided that we redo the way that we do things. Instead of contracting out for positions like that, we actually go out and look for people who can become Vermont residents to do jobs that we know are already here and waiting to be done.
All right,
there are lots of things like that.
Turn the tables here. Randy Brock, another question for David Zuckerman.
David, you've been a strong supporter of labor unions your whole career. You even said at an AFL-CIO forum in Barrie that as lieutenant governor, you'd be out on the picket lines if it came down to it. As lieutenant governor and potentially governor, you'd be part of the executive branch. You'd be part of management. How can Vermont taxpayers expect you to negotiate fair deals if you've already picked a side? And do you think it was appropriate for the lieutenant governor to be on the picket line, which you did just this past month in Burlington?
Well, a couple things. There was not actually a picket line in Burlington. There was a rally in support of bringing the negotiations back together and to continue the conversation. And frankly, I think continuing a conversation in labor negotiations is the best way to go about it. So again, that's a slight distortion, as is typical of your campaign, of what I've said and what I've done. You know, standing on the side of workers is not something that I'm going to back down from. You know, negotiations are a critical, important piece of workers fighting for those better wages that I was just talking about. How do we get folks better wages? You know, you also indicated that the lieutenant governor is part of the administration. The lieutenant governor is somewhat in between the two. The lieutenant governor is not actually part of the bargaining sessions. That's the governor and the governor's staff. And so, again, the role as governor is different than the role as lieutenant governor. But I will stand up for workers throughout the state, whether they be unionized or not, to get them better wages and better health care. I think that's part of what whole discussion around health care is also about in our state, making sure that average, ordinary Vermonters have accessible and affordable health care. We're not there yet, and I'm going to fight for that. And if that means fighting for workers, I'm proud of that.
When you say fighting for workers in a position of leadership in state government, don't you owe the responsibility to be balanced across the board and fight for workers and also fight for taxpayers and fight for all the other stakeholders, particularly those who also are interested in a responsible government that deals fairly with issues both from a management and from a labor perspective? How can you be solely for one side and represent your responsibility for being a balanced leader?
Actually, I think that is standing for all sides. As workers earn more money, they have more money to put into the economy and buy products from our businesses, and businesses will be able to expand. You know, there's considering that workers make up the vast majority of our population, I think that's standing up for the vast majority of Vermonters. And when it comes to being taxpayers, absolutely. The great point that you've made and others is if we have workers earning more money and the economy is growing, then we will have the revenues we need without actually raising taxes. So I think standing with workers and working to make sure folks earn a living with dignity is actually for the best of all Vermonters.
A question, David Zuckerman, from you for Randy Brock.
Randy, you've barraged Vermonters with TV and radio ads that do not put forth any ideas or vision for Vermont and have created an atmosphere of negativity. How can Vermonters trust you or know what you stand for when you've been so misleading and have not shared your ideas?
Well, one, I disagree in terms of being misleading at all, because every one of statements made in my ads has been referenced, and I will defend those. Now, if you refer to not being objective about the things that I propose to do, I've been doing that for the past year. I've been doing it in writing. I've been doing it in news releases. I've been doing it in forums. I've been doing it in written materials. And indeed, there is a new television ad that is going up today that specifically talks about my plans and programs in detail. So that's something that you can look at and you can see. So from that standpoint, I don't believe anything I've said is misleading. Now, one of the things, I've been critical of you for a number of things that you've said and done during the campaign, and I think you know what those things are. And my point in this is we have a fairly denuded press corps in Vermont. I would love for the press to have talked to the public about things such as your statements regarding the National Guard, about what you said and did regarding charging the taxpayers for driving mileage that you didn't actually drive yourself, of taking a position that at the time you said that it was done because, well, you probably shouldn't do it, but nonetheless, you weren't paid a lot. You only 5 years later raised the issue that somebody told you to do it.
That's not true. It was not
raised in the article that was originally written. And if I don't say that to the public who weren't aware of it, who would?
Well, I would say two things. One, not being in the article doesn't mean I didn't say it. In fact, I spoke to that reporter for 25 minutes. And I would frankly ask anybody who's listening to go to my website, Zuckerman4VT.com/factcheck. And folks can review the various accusations you've made and the facts and the laws behind all of those different misleading points, frankly. That's where people can look at the law or look at your statements distorting what I've said and really talk about character and how it's very important, I think, in leadership in government to bring positive and honest discourse, not mislead people with mischaracterizations.
David, everybody knows that you shouldn't bill your employer for things that you haven't done.
Reference the law, which is exactly what you were told to do. You can look for
any loophole you want. Everybody knows that. And there was a mechanism to put in the miles that you actually did. I did that. You didn't.
Actually, you also, in that same article, indicated you took the meals allowance because there are allowances, not reimbursements. And this is, again, where using accurate wording is reflective of integrity and policy.
Let me just step in here for people who maybe who maybe haven't been following this race as closely as others to say what we're talking about here, what the candidates are talking about here are some of the allowances that those in the legislature, rules have changed since then, but are or were allowed to take in terms of mileage reimbursement, meals,
mileage
and rooms.
Allowance.
Right. So the allowance was you were allowed to take a certain amount based on the idea that you'd be commuting to and from the state house during the days that you were working as a legislator. So it was an allowance, as David Zuckerman points out, not a reimbursement in the law at the time. You were allowed to take a certain allowance. And the question here is both legal and ethical, as I hear it, about what should you be allowed to take, what are you allowed to take under the law as legislators in the state of Vermont. And David Zuckerman, as it's been reported over the years, you took an allowance when you were at times carpooling, so you were not actually using the miles on your car. Just to clarify for
just
people
as,
who are listening.
Just as my opponent in the same article indicated, he took the full allowance when spending only $10 or $20 on food as opposed to $60. And it's also true with the overnight allowance, whether you rent an apartment or you rent a room for the full allowance of $110 a night. The point being, all of those are allowances. People may disagree with that state law, which actually has not changed. The implementation of the law by legislative council actually changed because I brought it up. And Randy, I'm sorry that the author of the article didn't discuss it relative to the full 25 minutes of conversation I had with him, because I brought that to the attention of the public. So as the quote whistleblower, I've now also been the fall guy. But the representation and misrepresentation of that discussion has continued. Even when you've been given the accurate information, you continue to repeat the misinformation. And
well,
that, to me,
let me argue
says
that
something
not
about
misinformation.
Integrity. There is.
And there is a difference between the mileage allowance and the allowance for meals, because the meals is a fixed set rate. But legislative council had a process in place at the very time the article was written, so that if your mileage differed at any given point, you came into the legislative council's office and you changed the number.
That number
of miles was very specific and was individual to legislators, whereas the meal allowance was a flat rate for everyone, and there was no provision in place to change it.
The mileage allowance is also a flat rate per mile for everybody, and what you're supposed to write down is the miles that you live away from the statehouse. That's what we were instructed to do. And we were instructed to change it, for instance, when we stayed overnight. We were not instructed to change it under any other circumstance. In fact, if you're homesick, you're supposed to still get that allowance. And there are times when I actually look at the law. That's what's important when you're talking about issues, Randy, is to actually look at the law and use the facts. And that law is actually, again, on that website that I spoke of earlier. But in fact, there were nights that I didn't change it, which would have been a higher cost to the taxpayer. I stayed overnight, but I didn't change it because also those changes, especially in that instance, were more effort than it was worth, to be perfectly honest. And so it's basically a wash. But in either case, I was following the law and the practice as we were told to, and as you were as well.
I'm going to pause this here.
That was not the practice at the time. The practice was in to see Janet in the Legislative Council office and put down the number of miles that you actually
took. We have the legislative memos. You can look at them. That's the practice.
That's what I did.
Well, also,
that's what others did.
Listeners, I want to invite you to listen to the two interviews that we've done with these candidates where these issues were brought up and discussed quite extensively, and those were just conducted last month. You can go to vpr.net, look for those interviews. There's a lot more on this. We've just got time for one or two very quick questions in sort of a mini lightning round. So in the interest of getting more issues on the table, let's just talk about a couple of quick things. The quicker you answer, the more we'll get to. On guns, any measures you would like to take or see the state take on regulation of firearms? Let's see, who do we go to? I can't even think of who we go to now. Randy Brock, we'll go to you first.
I think Vermont's firearm laws are adequate as they are, but I do believe that we do have robust federal laws, particularly that prevent weapons from being in the hands of felons, and I don't think the federal laws are being enforced to the extent that they ought to be, particularly in terms of the number of people who shouldn't have guns who go to licensed dealers to get them and are rejected, but no federal action is taken. So I think the feds do need to do a better job.
Enforce federal laws. David Zuckerman?
Like 85% of Vermonters, I support universal background checks. I recognize that's not going to stop all crime. I support the Second Amendment. I do not support our gun registry.
Okay, one more very quick here while we get it in. You both have different opinions, different stands on the legalization of recreational marijuana, but some voters may not have heard them. David Zuckerman, where do you stand?
Well, I've been a longtime advocate for bringing our underground economy above board in a regulated manner. It will mean cleaner product. It will mean keeping it out of the hands of our children better than we have in the model of prohibition. It will mean resources for particularly education and prevention, as well as treatment of our opiate addicts, as well as others. It's a health issue, not a criminal issue, and it could actually be an economic development issue as well.
Randy Brock?
All of the medical providers, educators, and law enforcement that I've spoken to, almost without exception, does not think that this is a good idea, particularly because of the effect of marijuana on the adolescent brain that's not entirely fully understood as yet and poses some risk. We have a problem about highway safety in terms of the potential of impairment. The economic numbers that we've seen, frankly, do not make sense. It's like pouring gasoline on a raging fire. And lastly, it's still against federal law. That's where the big difference is between the prohibition of alcohol and the subsequent legalization of it. And it sends an awful message to Vermont youth. I don't think it's – I will never say never, but not now.
All right, so we've got 45 seconds for a final question to each of you to wrap up this debate today. Again, this is the Lieutenant Governor's debate on Vermont Edition. If you are elected Lieutenant Governor, how will Vermont be a better place in 2 years after your first term in office? David Zuckerman?
Well, you'll have someone who's working positively with our community to make Vermonters' lives better, from raising the minimum wage to working to address climate change, affordable housing, affordable child care, and access to higher education, as well as a solid review of our healthcare system so that it benefits everybody.
Randy Brock?
You'll have a lieutenant governor who will have focused the past 2 years on the things that are really important to Vermonters. One of them being to make Vermont's economy better so that they and their families can prosper, so that there's more money in their pockets, and so that the crushing burden that's forcing so many of our citizens to leave Vermont can be eased. Those are the things that I'm focused on doing, and it's for that everyday Vermonter, the person who finds him or herself struggling right now. Those are the issues that I want to address, and I want to address it both with the business community. I want to address it with those companies and individuals who are creating jobs. I want to look at state government and focus on some of the streamlining and reengineering that can reduce some of the burdens on our taxpayers who have to pay for it. All of those are things that I'm going to focus on.
Well, I want to thank both of you very much for being here, for taking part in this debate today. You've been listening to the Lieutenant Governor debate on Vermont Edition, Republican Randy Brock and Progressive Democrat David Zuckerman. Thanks very much to both
of
you.
Thank you, Jane.
Our debate series continues tomorrow with the U.S. Senate race live at noon. This is a head-to-head debate between Democratic incumbent Patrick Leahy and Republican challenger Scott Milne. It is, in fact, the only one-on-one debate between just the two of those candidates this election season. And please join Bob Kinzel and me on Thursday night for a live 90-minute debate with the candidates for governor. VPR's election debates are produced by Rick Singeri, Sam Gail Rosen, and Meg Malone. Our director is Mary Williams, and our executive producer is Patty Daniels. Thanks as well today to Chris Albertine. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.